Hello and welcome to the Frogs of War podcast. I'm Marshall Weber, and joining me always is my dear friend. He's been known to give some disconcerting signals. It's Andrew Brown.
If you're not disconcerting, then you're not concerning.
That was kind of like a question. Is it Andrew Brown?
Is it?
It's Andrew Brown?
It's not me.
That is true. And it's not Andrew Feltz, despite what some people... I can understand how that's confusing. There's two Andrews. I call you Andrew.
So my boss at work, his name is Andrew, and we just hired another director, and his name is also Andrew.
Gotta go by your middle name.
Well, yeah. The team has... Should I be worried about this? I'm on an 11-person team, and I'm the only one without a nickname so far. Everybody else has a nickname except me.
Just go by one of the many I call you.
Well, but no, it has to be organic. You can't nickname yourself. One guy tried to nickname himself...
It's true.
Something. I can't remember what. Now we call him Pants.
Like just an episode of Seinfeld.
He's a UT fan, actually, so.
Well, he probably wasn't terribly happy today, like the UT fans I work with. I kept my quiet, you know, I mean, there's no reason to rub it in anybody's face.
No reason to rub it in, you know, when you get beat 50-7, you know.
Yeah, and especially in games you're, like, supposed to win, you know. Maybe, like, 2-3 years ago, I would have done it, but wasn't worth it.
Nah.
Wasn't worth it. We were both at the game. We didn't sit next to each other like sometimes we do.
Because somebody didn't have a ticket for me.
I give you free tickets.
You do. It's true.
For every game.
And
but
I'm appreciative of that.
But you'll have them for the rest of the time. But yeah, I mean, obviously a 50-7 game. I don't know. Where do you want to start? What was your biggest takeaway? What excited you most about the game?
Actually, first, we
have to backtrack because we are doing a new thing now.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry, as I'm getting thirsty, I thought of it. So as we play Kansas State this week, and we'll get to that preview in just a few minutes. Unfortunately, my goal was to find Manhattan has a few breweries. My goal was to find.
Okay, let's rewind a little bit further.
Okay, yeah.
So
even
last week on the pod. Myself and Mr. Weber here were sipping on some adult beverages.
We had like one beer.
Very casually. Yeah. We're both of age. It's, you know, nothing wrong with it.
Radical.
But so what we decided is moving forward, we're going to make it a little bit more of a tradition. And, you know, very, very respectfully and very, very, you know, not belligerently. Is that?
Yeah, we're just going to have like, just one.
Just one.
I mean, to about an hour podcast. So, yeah, my goal was to find one for Manhattan. You know, you could have I could have found some from Kansas, but that would kind of be like, oh, we're playing Tucson next week. Let's have, you know, an IPA from Austin or Dallas. It doesn't really fit. And since I couldn't find any at either Randall's or HEB, I just decided in the meantime, until Iowa State or Morgantown, West Virginia, want to just start sending me local beers. We're going to just drink a Texas beer or Texas alcoholic beverage every time because we're kind of cheating this week. But the goal is...
We're completely cheating, and that's really sad that we're starting off this whole, you know, microbrew...
process. It doesn't have to be microbrew. It could be...
Well, or whatever, but we're starting off the whole, like, hey, let's drink...
It could be Shiner,
representative
it could be
beers, but we're not drinking beer.
Yeah. So... I mean, just going forward, if you have a beer, a Texas beer, then in mind that reminds you of an upcoming opponent, tell us on the Twitter. We'd love to hear it. But today, we're going to start with our hometown in Austin. And like I said, we're cheating because we're starting with a cider. This is called Austin East Ciders Original Dry Cider. They're not paying us to do this.
They should be, but they're not.
And the reason why I chose this one is this cider is made from apples. And their little tagline is, how do you like them apples? With the them is very heavily underlined. Little Goodwill Hunting for you. Obviously, that's a common idiom. Or it's not really an idiom, but maybe it is. Whatever. Grammar aside, it's made from apples.
Was that a phrase before Goodwill Hunting?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing I think about when I think of it.
Yeah.
But so Manhattan, they call it the Little Apple. And... yeah, so this cider reminds me of Kansas State. So we are going to pop it. Ah, that sound. Good sound. And we're totally also, like, ripping off Men in Blazers, but that's okay. Because people drink on podcasts anyway. Try it. Have you had this before?
Mm-mm. It's good. You know, I'm not really a cider guy.
Oh, man, I love cider.
Really?
Yeah. That's what they drink, man. That's what they drink in, like, Scotland. They well, love cider.
Yeah, I mean, I've had overseas cider, and that's significantly better. Actually, I tell you what. I had, when I was in London, I had this cider.
Yeah,
that was
good.
Well, no. Oh, no, not this stuff. It was served in, like, a liter bottle, like, you know, a 7-Up liter kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was, like, something like, I can't remember, like, £2 or something. It was very cheap, especially by London standards.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, you know, a bargain hunter American over here, you know, cheating the system. That was the worst thing I've ever had in my life. And I thought my head was going to split in half the next morning. And
yeah, these will give you a little bit of a headache the next morning. But I like, this is what I drink when I go to like a show or something. I don't know. I like it. I like the way it makes me feel. They're really into like, England's a great place in the UK. They're really into burgers. And like, they have like 15-pound burgers. And I don't mean like pound as in weight. I mean, as in like, it costs about 20 of our dollars for a hamburger, like a gourmet burger. So that's interesting. But speaking of burgers, speaking of, you know, cooked beef, TCU.
Well played transition,
TCU
sir.
Cooked some cattle themselves this weekend. After, you could even say halfway through the first quarter, it was done. But 50-7 was the final result. It felt a lot worse than that. Okay, like I said, we're going to go back. We've kind of started in the middle, and now we've kind of jumped back. So what was your biggest takeaway? What did you most enjoy from the game?
Well, you know, it's just, we haven't had an 11 o'clock game in a while.
God, it's brutal.
And, you know, it is brutal.
But everybody rallied. Everybody
but it was
there.
It was kind of nostalgic in a way. It was almost like the whole TCU fan base, you know, especially those of us that were there for the Mountain West days, it was kind of like, that's almost perfect for homecoming if you think about it, because it's all the alumni coming back and they're used to that, you know.
Yeah.
The kids there now, you know, you kids,
you kids,
they're getting, you know, usually at the earliest, like a 2:30 start, you know, because most of the time they're exactly. And, you know,
spoiled punks.
Good for them. But, you know, we true TCU fans, we hard-shipped, you know, battle-tested TCU fans,
the Oklahoma,
struggled through going undefeated through the Mountain West year after year.
I guess your junior year, in the first year I was out of school, that Oklahoma game was the longest day of my life.
Was that a night game?
No, it was an 11 o'clock game.
Oh, man.
Because I stayed up for it. We got up about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and I stayed up almost 24 hours. I think I did stay up 24 hours. I mean, that I had a different, like, you know, gear back then before, you know, like I always tell you, it's just like, you're going to next year, or year after, you're going to hit the point, but like, man, it's 9 o'clock, man, I'm tired. But, that was the longest day of my life. Saturday didn't really feel that way. I mean, I don't know. I handled myself well. I think my biggest takeaway was, you know, that first drive, you know, my stomach is always kind of like in knots at the first part of the games. But when Kindred, I mean, trying to think of a polite way to say this without trying to sound like vindictive, but when Dodgy Johnson went out, and Kindred laid that hit on him, I knew that the game was over. You take away a weapon like Johnson, and then the punt happened a few minutes later, the muffed, the kind of, it was a long snapper's fault, but, you know, the safety, and then we responded and scored right after that. First of all, that first quarter was really long. That first quarter was like an hour and a half. The second quarter was really short too. I mean, I thought it was gonna be like a 4 or 5 hour game, you know, especially since it was on ABC, which, by the way, how great is it to have a game like that on ABC? I mean, that's like our national televised one. We didn't look like chumps. We just went out there, played the best game of the season.
I'd argue that's the fact that the game was on ABC is why we're number two this week.
Yeah.
I think. If that had been a Fox, you know, Southwest game, no chance.
Sure. And, I mean, that's kind of the benefit you get when you play Texas. You know, you're going to get a televised game. And that was like the biggest, you know, I mean, we've talked about this before. I'm sure it'll somehow echo into, you know, many of the podcasts we do, but people always ask me, it's like, when we first went in the Big 12 and, you know, we had a few losses, like, you know, do you miss dominating, you know, the Mountain West? Do you miss being there? I was like, no, man. I mean, you get to play on national TV, you know, you get to play on ABC, or in the very worst, you play on like ESPN2. No, you just can't beat it. But yeah, I mean, we'll get to, like, you know, Turpin in a moment. I mean, was there any sign to you that you knew the game was just out of Texas's hands?
Yeah, actually, the moment for me, because I was actually walking into the stadium when Kindred dislodged the ball from Johnson and you know, got that whole thing kicked off. But actually, the moment for me that I knew I think most Frog fans probably knew it was over pretty early in the game. But the moment that I realized, like, yeah, this isn't going to be a problem today, was they threw a fade to Doxson.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the one he caught. It was a couple plays before that. But he just burned the DB so badly that, you know, the DB did the right thing. He basically tackled him before he could get the ball, which, you know, if you're going to give up a touchdown, that's what you should do.
Yeah.
But once I saw that and just saw how thoroughly outmatched the Texas defensive backs were.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Doxson had no trouble.
Somebody tweeted, and I'm not, again, my goal is not to, like, blow up anybody's spot and, like, harass anybody, but there were some just people making news out of nothing. Like, somebody went, a Texas writer went on a, I don't know how they found this, maybe somebody sent it to them, but they found some TCU fan account who's probably, like, a middle school kid. It's like, oh, Texas has three defensive backs that are freshmen. It's like, Josh Doxson's going to run all over them. And the guy was just like, uh-oh, bulletin board material. And then Doxson has like 112 whatever yards and 2 touchdowns. I actually did not think Doxson was going to get over 100. I thought he was going to get 80 or 90, or from 70 to 90. But I didn't think he was going to get over 100 just because I thought they were going to cover him so well. But can't even double coverage him, put him in double coverage and you get pretty much the same result. So
no, I mean, you know, it's funny, even my coworkers at work today were, you know, talking about it a lot. And one of my buddies who's a Baylor guy was even talking you know, and they've got Katie Cannon and Corey Coleman, two of the better receivers in the country.
Corey Coleman's having an amazing season. Cannon's been a little quiet, hasn't he?
Yeah, but
he's still pretty amazing. He's pretty good. I mean, if they need him, they'll go to him.
Yeah. But you know, my Baylor friend, which is a statement I never thought I would say.
Don't have,
but this. He was just raving about Doxson, and he couldn't stop talking about him. And he was, you know, just kept saying, "Man, you can, I mean, you just put the ball in that guy's, you know, zip code, and it's his."
And he looks good, but you know, Doxson looked great. Our boy Story looked good. He caught the passes he needed to. Yeah, I mean, there's so many different ways we could approach this. I mean, we'll get into Listing B later. But I've seen a lot of players come through TCU. You have too. I've been on the Boykin train pretty much since day one. Always liked Doxson. But I can't remember a fan base being just universally just so gung-ho about a player as Turpin.
Well,
at least from the beginning.
I mean,
it's hard not to be.
It's hard not to be. And I think Jamie might have said this on his recent article or you know, write-up or something from the game that, you know, not only is he a special player, but he's a terrific person by all accounts too, you know.
And Patterson said he's always smiling.
He's just, you know, he's just
smiley, they call him.
A morale guy. He's, you know, a good kid. You know, he's not somebody that you're really going to have to worry about. And you put him on the field and it's just incredible. The things that he does, his vision, the cuts he makes, you know,
that wheel route I've watched like 100 times.
And, you know, Boykin, he has quickly become Boykin's second favorite target.
Yeah.
Which will be interesting to see how that dynamic plays out when Listonby gets back.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, once we get into the reader mail, we can talk more about Listonby. But, yeah, there's no question TCU is a better team with Listonby on there. But it's just the way they're able to adapt without Listonby is just so incredible. I mean, Turpin, you know, he catches 4 touchdowns in a day. You know, the best, you know, a Big 12 freshman has had in a long time. And then, you know, the week before that, Stewart got a couple looks and played wonderful. So, you know, Tony James, I keep wanting to say Tony Scott, who is director, who Ridley Scott's brother, who passed away a few years ago, but
Tony James,
yeah. You know, all these guys are stepping up. You know, I haven't been unimpressed with the receiver. I mean, Porter will be back in a couple weeks, so TCU, they'll be fine. I think Listonby, let's just answer this person's question because they asked a couple questions, so let's just answer it now. They asked when Listonby will be back. I think they're just taking it kind of day to day. I mean, he's suiting up. He's not on the field. So, I mean, that's a good sign. I just think because no team, Tech or Texas, has been able to stop Boykin / Doxson / Turpin / Stewart, whoever you want to put in there, it's just been working. There really is no reason to risk Listonby right now. I know he wants to be out there. You see that from his Instagram. I read right before I came over to your house. And, I mean, he clearly wants to play, but, you know. It's not worth it.
Yeah. We'll need him too much later in the season.
Right. I mean,
he means too much because as great as the young kids are playing right now, as great as Turpin looks, Turpin's due for a bad game. Every young player has a bad game. And at some point, you know, I mean, Doxson.
Or just maybe just a game that he, not necessarily like terrible, like, but, you know, just a game where he's not going to make the impact he had on Saturday.
Or, you know, where a defensive coordinator draws up a good game plan and just contains him. And maybe, you know, Doxson is off or something. And, you know, we're going to have a third guy to go to. And that's going to be, you know, Listonby. That's going to be the guy who can take the top off the defense and open everything else up. You know, when we go to OU, you know, and obviously this is looking way far ahead, but you know, when we're in those tough environments, we're going to need our second guy or, you know, 1B to Doxson. Well, I mean, I guess Doxson's kind of solidified himself as, you know, the guy, but I think people have also kind of forgotten just how explosive and exciting Listonby can be.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So I think you're right. I think it's just
a matter of time. I mean,
we didn't rush Davian Pearson back.
Exactly. You're right. I mean, I'd rather have him at 100% going into that brutal November schedule than, you know, him having to risk something now. But, you know, injuries definitely plague TCU. That's kind of like, but a lot of people that write about college football, you know, they keep saying, oh, TCU's plagued with injury. But TCU had a pretty big player come back Saturday. And it was very easy to tell from the stands because of his hair. Big T back on the team.
Yeah.
Looking good. And it's so great. I mean, not only that he's back and all that stuff got taken care of, but it just shows you how much different of a team is TCU can be with a little more. Like we said last week, I think we saw the worst of the TCU defense at Texas Tech. We've probably seen the worst of it. You know, than what we saw at SMU, and it's only gonna get better. But with Tua back and Lathan presumably coming back, I mean, it looks like all signs are pointing for him to come back this weekend. With TCU, a healthy defensive line, a deep defensive line, and the linebackers doing as well as they are, I'm very excited to see what this defense becomes by November.
Yeah, I mean, they're gonna struggle with, you know, the top offenses that they play. Just,
yeah,
if nothing else, you know, depth is going to hurt them. Lack of experience is going to hurt them a little bit. Although,
yeah,
the fact that so many, you know, young guys got to have,
but I mean,
legitimate road experience.
Kindred
at Tech,
and Johnson are two great safeties. Isihaka, I think we've finally may have found an answer for weak safety, which I think is the most important position. Or not the most important position, but the position we most need.
The biggest hole in our defense.
The biggest hole, yeah.
Yeah.
So having a guy that, you know, I mean, he played a really good game. I think he was third in tackles. He had, I think, 9. I think he had 6 assists and 3 solo. Big day for him. So, you know, again, no shots at his backup, but I definitely feel a lot more comfortable with him. And it's only going to get better. I'm trying to think what I was most impressed with. Just, I don't know. I mean, I was trying to explain this to somebody today and talking on G-Chat as I do. This offense just does something new every week to just impress me and floor me. It's hard to, I mean, you can quantify it. I mean, I've said they're more efficient, and they are. And, you know, we'll go a little bit more inside the numbers here in a minute once you get to Kansas State. But I feel like they can do anything they want to just about any time. I mean, you're not going to be perfect on your throws. Green's not going to break away a touchdown every time, but this offense is just so in sync with each other that until they get maybe to even Oklahoma, that I just see it being very, very hard for other teams to keep up.
Well, yeah, I mean, think about it this way. They have, you know, I don't know what Boykin will be at the next level. I'm obviously optimistic. I think he'll get drafted high because, you know, he'll finish with huge stats and people always reach for quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Doxson is looking, I mean, not only first rounder, he's looking like a top 10 draft pick.
Yeah.
And Listonby, you know, assuming he comes back and shows he's fully healthy and it finishes the season
it's
strong.
Hard. It would be hard for any NFL team to pass up that speed.
Yeah,
no matter
exactly.
If he goes, you know, I mean, given it's not really his fault because of the injuries, but if he goes third, fourth round, even in the, you know, late rounds, it's fine. I mean they're going to get a steal. They're going to get a steal because he's so fast.
He could go undrafted and he'll still make a team just because of his speed. And you know, Green is probably going to make a team somewhere.
Yeah.
Big V, who we'll get to his ankle in a second, but he's looking like, you know, he has the makeup of a defense or of, a, excuse me, of an offensive tackle at the next level. So, I mean, you have a lot of probable pro players. Say that three times fast. But you have a lot of guys who are more than likely going to move on to the next level. And they've been playing together for, you know, the better part of 3 years now. And, you know, when you have that kind of skill and that kind of continuity, it would take a really, really, really special defense to not only, you know, slow them down, but to stop them to the degree that, you know, a team really would have to, you know, to put the clamps on TCU. And just looking forward, I mean, there are good players in the Big 12, but there's not a Big 12 defense that is that skilled, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and we'll get to it in Kansas when we get to Kansas State. I mean, they've been efficient, but given who they've played, you know, it's questionable. West Virginia, you know, again, one of the more efficient defenses, but you get a spread offense, you get a kind of the pseudo hybrid air raid like Oklahoma has with Lincoln Riley and Baker Mayfield and all the weapons. And the Big 12 is about offense. It's about shootouts, and I don't understand why. You know, some people are starting to catch on. Some of the media are starting to catch on, but I don't get it, man. I think we proved that last year in the Peach Bowl, man. The fact that the Big 12 is just basically a conference of shootouts. I think it's the most fun conference. Sometimes watching A&M games is entertaining, and I like watching you know, some of their players, but man, some of the SEC games are just boring. I turn them off.
Yeah, they get hard to watch.
I mean, those players are going to be good, you know, NFL players. That's kind of what it's built for. The NFL, the SEC is kind of, you know, obviously very good at that. But man, I like Oklahoma, TCU. I would seriously put those three teams in my top four, plus like Utah and Alabama. I think that win that Ole Miss had is a fluke, and that clearly showed. But I think of the five best teams, three are from the Big 12.
So who's your four right now? Season ends today. Who's in?
I mean, if the season ends today, you got to take Oklahoma, TCU, Baylor, and Utah. They're undefeated. But I think Alabama has a really good case. Ideally,
there's more than a few undefeated teams right now.
I mean,
yeah, so you're taking, you know, three Big 12 teams over. No, either Michigan State or Ohio State. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, here's the thing. I was high on Michigan State, and we were both high on Ohio State. I watched their game Saturday. I've somehow seen more of their games maybe than anyone else in the country. I mean, Michigan State barely beat Oregon. I mean, they beat them good, but then Utah blows Oregon out. I haven't been impressed with Ohio State at all.
Yeah.
What are they? Their quarterbacks have seven touchdowns?
Yeah.
And seven interceptions?
Their
receivers can't catch balls. They're not great on defense. That team could be beat twice by Michigan and Michigan State. They can. And Michigan State hasn't even been playing that well since they beat Oregon. And Oregon may not even be that good.
No, Oregon's not that good, but I don't know. I still think
my point is, why does Big 12 have to suffer when, you know, for offense when Ole Miss gets the benefit of the doubt when they lost, and you clearly saw that they weren't a good team. I could have told you when they played Vanderbilt they had plenty of flaws. They, you know, it was 24-16 whatever most of the, you know, towards the end of the game, and then they got like a, they, you know, it ended up being 27-16 or something. But you know, they give, you know, they're like, oh, I hate, you know, you don't want to, you got to give credit to Ole Miss. It's like they were playing at home against Vanderbilt, and you're trying to give them a gritty like narrative and that they're a resilient team. Nah, man, I don't buy it. I'll take the team that can score points and shoot people out.
Yeah, I mean,
a shootout, not shoot people out. I don't think that's
yeah, we don't encourage that. Again, this is a show for the children. So, yeah, I don't know. For me, in college football, it's always, you know, it does not matter really what else is going on. If you have a good quarterback, I'm always going to think of that team more highly than, you know, a team that has, you know, maybe good units, but a subpar quarterback. That's just kind of the way college is. You know, you can, you know, a lot of teams over the years have shown that you can win at least regular season games with, you know, just a really good quarterback. Take Texas with Colt McCoy, for example. I mean, his junior year, they were amazing. His senior year, at least offensively, not that impressive, but he was good and he carried them.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of on that note, I agree with you to, you know, a degree about a lot of the SEC schools, in that outside of A&M, I don't really think that the SEC has, you know, a whole lot of good quarterbacks. In fact, I would say that that's probably the weakest quarterback conference in the country.
I mean, that's probably Alabama's biggest flaw, is that they don't really have a good quarterback.
You know, I mean, even if you want to look at the ACC, I would take, you know, Everett Golson.
I love watching LSU. I love watching Fournette, but I mean,
they're barely beating Syracuse.
Yeah, exactly. Until the late, and they kind of run away with it. But if you don't have a good quarterback, by the end of the when it's all said and done at the end of the season, the four teams in the playoff are going to have four really special quarterbacks.
I agree.
There's not going to be a team that's, you know, God, and of course Georgia chokes. Why are people always, I like Georgia. I know people went to Georgia and they're good, but they're good people. But like, it's just like USC. It's like, why is everybody always high on Georgia? They always blow it.
Yeah,
They got destroyed at home. And Gabe is one of the best, like, memes, or whatever you want to call it, videos, vines of the college football season, the kind of the fade in, the rain into the sad bulldog, which is great. Look it up. Maybe we'll pin a tweet about it. But I don't know. I'm just, without a good quarterback, that's why I think, as much as I hate to say it, that A&M is probably, I think, my favorite to win probably the SEC. If they can beat Alabama.
It's a sad day when
I hate A&M. I mean, it makes me sick. It makes me sick to myself.
But as much as we hate them, we sure talk about them a lot on the podcast.
I'm kind of always trying to find a way to work it in, just to keep up the tradition. But so speaking of defenses, Kansas State doesn't really have a bad one.
No, the defense is the strength of their team. I mean, definitely, it always is. But you know, this year in particular,
definitely they have a great. This is, by the way, this is the portion where we talk about Kansas State. We're into the Kansas State preview right now.
Are we done talking about Texas?
Is there anything more you want to say? Is there anything? I think we hit all the points. Yeah, I think we got the defensive line. We got Turpin. We got, you know. I mean, there's nothing really to say. I don't want to kick Texas when they're down. They clearly have, you know, all their fans know that they clearly have plenty of problems, not just on the field, but off the field too, with Twitter and. I just don't think it's worth it.
Yeah, you're right. Just
let them unfold.
Send them out to the pasture and let them be.
But Kansas State brings in the number one rushing defense in the Big 12 by far and away. Oklahoma State has number two, and Kansas State nearly has, half of what they do, basically. Kansas State's only allowing 71 yards on the ground, which is insane, because Oklahoma State has 132, and they're the second rushing defense in the Big 12. But then again, take it in stride, because Kansas State is, aside from South Dakota, who we're just going to ignore, you know, they played Louisiana Tech, they played Oklahoma State, and they played UTSA. Yeah. And I saw the UTSA game. I saw a little bit of the Oklahoma State game. Like I've said on record, I'm not really impressed with Oklahoma State thus far. But even if you take Louisiana Tech and UTSA, teams that really aren't that good, Louisiana Tech is the 49th most rushing yards in the country. UTSA is like 79th, and then Oklahoma State's 102. So you take that sample, and maybe they haven't seen that many great running backs. Still, 71 yards is impressive. I don't know. Can you make a case for Aaron Green?
Well,
or the running back core in general?
So
we can talk about our boy.
Yeah,
Hicks.
Sure. So I can make a case for Aaron Green all day long. First of all, I guarantee you they have not seen a line like TCU's.
True.
TCU has, you know, we talked about this before the season, and I'll talk about it every single week. I mean, just, you know, knowing football and having watched as much, you know, football as I have, if you have a good line on both sides of the ball, you will always have a chance to win.
True.
Does not matter who else is out there, you know, quarterback excluded. But so they have not seen a line like ours. That's, you know, part A. But part B, Green is one of those backs. He reminds me almost to a T of LeSean McCoy, just the way he runs.
Yeah.
And that's one of those guys that you just really can't game plan for what he's going to do, because half the time he doesn't even know what he's going to do until after he did it.
Yeah.
You know, he makes so many just, you know, stop, cut on a dime, you know, cuts and, you know, so many unorthodox moves and things that you just, you know, even if you watch film on the guy, you just can't prepare for, because it's all just kind of, you know, instinct and heat of the moment. So, you know, a runner like that is just so difficult to prepare for. You know, maybe they bottle him up, but, you know, maybe as, you know, he showed last year when we played Kansas State, maybe he makes a couple guys miss and he's off to the races. So, I think that Kansas State will probably, I don't think Green is going to have a career day against them, but I also think that, you know, on the road, Gary seems to be making more of a concerted effort to, you know, run the ball a little bit and, you know, maybe control things on the ground. And so I forecast Green going over 100 yards on the day.
It's a bold prediction. I think maybe it goes more like he kind of did on this past Saturday, where we got about 70. Kansas State doesn't really have they don't have a terrible one by any means. I mean, you get Bill Snyder, you're always going to have a team that can go out and just play really smart football, pretty much error-free football. They hardly commit any penalties. You know, that's just kind of the Snyder way. Believe it or not, TCU has the third best passing defensive passing efficiency in the Big 12, which is kind of
how is that possible?
I don't know.
Is everybody else that bad?
But Kansas State is sixth. They have in efficiency, and I think they're about eighth in pass defense. So it's really a big could be a really big day for Boykin. Like we've talked about many times, the kind of the in route to people like Sean Nixon or whoever plays slot that day, Jarrison Stewart. You know, it was a great way to kill teams at the middle. And this is what I want to talk about earlier is TCU is second in the nation in total first downs. They're also second in first downs per game. And last year, they were just outside the top 10. So we've talked about before how, and this has a lot to do with listening to me being out, actually, because you take away that kind of kill shot, Hail Mary threat, and you kind of have to take it a little slower, you know? It's not just so much listening to me is kind of the maturation of Boykin and how he, you know, with Hunt and how he's just reading the defense better and saying, all right, instead of, you know, trying to just throw it deep, let's kind of just take it piece by piece and just cut through this defense. So the first downs are indicative of that. And I think with Kansas State's passing defense, I think that's they're going to get to him on offense. The one thing I do worry about the offense before I'm going to ask you a question is, I guess I'm always nervous. Well, really, I'm just nervous with our red zone defense or red zone offense. And Kansas State has really good red zone defense. So if they can just capitalize, and that's where the running kind of takes into place too, because I like us running in the red zone. I think that, you know, not so much that Green is less effective in the in the red zone, or Johnson or Hicks, whoever they put in there. But the thing is with Boykin, when they're passing in the red zone, like you saw at the end of the game, or about the third quarter in the Texas game, it's like, I was praising Stewart, and he's a young guy, he's going to drop passes, but you know, Boykin had two wide open guys to, you know, they would have put it away. I think it was maybe, I don't know, it would have been over 50, but so I don't know, with the young defense and the young slots, I like us running more. Hicks looks really good in the red zone, and this is what I'm going to get to. So that's the one thing I'm worried about. If TCU can just find a way to kind of just capitalize when they get in the red zone, that's one way that I just for sure kind of makes it likely that they're going to win. But who do you think they're actually grooming to be the, you know, Aaron Green's a senior. Who do you think they're grooming to be the next back?
That's a good question. Well, so this to me is kind of the first time that I can really remember TCU leaning very heavily on one back, especially considering the wealth of talent that they have, because they really do use
Green the most, but...
Well, they use Hicks more to kind of spell him, and they use Nixon more as a receiver.
But here's the thing, and that's what I'm saying is, I think, yeah, keep going.
Well, and the point I'm making is, traditionally, TCU has really always had more of a by-committee approach with running backs.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think back to the Rose Bowl team, it was obviously Ed Wesley was the guy, but Matthew Tucker was also the guy, and Waymon James was also the guy.
Andre Dean.
Yeah, he didn't play as much, but still.
Still, when he was effective when he was in.
The year before, you know, Ryan Christian was there.
Yeah.
So.
Shout out.
Yeah. Did you? I random, you know, non sequitur, but I ran into him one time at Chipotle. On, I think it was on Hewlin, and he just like yelled something to me, and I didn't know who he was, and I just kind of looked at him, and I was like, why is that guy yelling at me? And he was telling me that I looked like Tim Tebow.
You look nothing like
Tim Tebow. I don't think I look anything like Tim
Tebow. Not even close.
Yeah.
Tim Tebow than you do.
Yeah.
I don't look like Tim Tebow at all.
So anyways, totally unrelated, but, so... I guess the answer to that question, as far as who's going to start next year, I'd say probably Nixon.
I think it's good.
Because okay. He's the most versatile. But I think they're really starting to gain a lot of confidence in Hicks.
So
I think Hicks is him gaining confidence in himself.
I think they're gaining, yeah.
And I think those two are going to be, and obviously I want Johnson to, you know, get more touches, and because he is a weapon still. But I really think the future of the running back position is Nixon and Hicks.
Yeah.
Hickson. Let's make that a thing.
I don't know. It's hard to say because I think they want to use Hicks more, but I think he's... Because the way they use Nixon, they kind of use him as a hybrid. They use him kind of as both the receiver and
Hicks is kind of like green light at this
point. Well, yeah, because I mean, I think they want to use Hicks as a running back. And they, you know... It's kind of a weird thing to say, but I mean, like, you know, because like we're saying, you know, they're using Nixon as a hybrid. Green's the starter, and then Johnson's kind of the guy that comes in to kind of just power through when we're in the red zone or kind of at the end of the game. But like you saw, I mean, Hicks' touchdown got called back, but he's definitely, I think, the number two. Mainly because I think they want to do something kind of interesting with Nixon and kind of use him as that hybrid and kind of use them both. But I think he's definitely the second running back on the team, if that makes sense. You know, and everybody loves Kyle Hicks. I mean,
yeah.
he kind of gave a little, Kyle Hicks was once going to go to UT, and then he decided smartly to change his mind, and he kind of gave the classic horns down. Did you see that? I didn't know that until I rewatched the game yesterday.
So... I didn't.
They called it back, but I mean, he
didn't know that either. But I'm not gonna lie to you. I was sitting basically right next to the UT band.
Yeah.
And we were having a jolly old time, you know, explaining to the UT band that their team was losing. You know, after every score, we would.
I just feel bad for the band. Saw us play the fight song, even when they're down by like 40. No matter who you play, it's just
really is sad, man.
It's just like we're still in this, but.
But I mean, what is it? You know, what does it say if you stop playing? Yeah. I feel like instead of a fight song, there should be like a mercy song.
Yeah, they kind of exactly. Instead of they play Texas Fight, they play
like Texas Stop,
or just like some somber song that pop song or something.
Yeah. Like Adele or something, but
yeah.
So I flashed the horns down to the Texas band for the first time in my life. I've never put the horns down before. And I'm not going to lie. I felt dirty, but I kind of liked it.
Felt good.
But I'm not going to do it again.
Yeah. But I guess what I'm saying with Hicks is that he feels like, because Nixon, like, to say again, to repeat myself, but yeah, I mean, he just seems kind of like a hybrid at this point. And Hicks seems like the you get the Hickson in my head now.
You're welcome.
He seems like the most pure like running back aside from Green, so I think that's what they're kind of grooming him towards. And he would probably play more, but no situation really calls for it yet, because either they want Green in there or it's just garbage time where they want Johnson to either, you know, power through the red zone or, you know, just run out the clock in the fourth quarter. So I still think the answer is Hicks. Conversely, let's talk a little bit about our defense and Kansas State's offense. Do you think it was more Texas, maybe a little bit of both, but do you think the defense is going to continue to get better, especially if Latham comes back?
I think it was a little bit of both. I think, for one thing, I think, you know, TCU, the first couple of years in the Big 12, they were just god-awful at home.
Yeah. Which is weird.
Which is weird.
Because they're so good at home now.
But it almost became like a, uh-oh, like we're at home this week. That means we're probably going to lose.
I didn't see them win from, in person, from maybe the Virginia game, 2012, until Samford last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I missed like I didn't go to that Kansas game, and I don't think I went to the, because the opener was at LSU, and I didn't go to the SMU game that year, and whatever garbage team we played in the middle, Louisiana, whatever.
Yeah, Southeast Louisiana or something like that.
I didn't go to that game. So there was almost like a two-year gap where I didn't see us win at home.
Wow. But yeah, the point I was making, though, is that this speaks just absolute volumes about the crowd and the student section in particular. I mean, the students, good Lord. Students, big shout out to you. You guys were amazing yet again.
Meacham, Big Meach was throwing out the love. I mean, rowdy. He used the hashtag like rowdy as hell. Doug Meacham. Doug Meacham is the, I think, I love Patterson, and that photo of him throwing a football into the crowd at the end of the game is probably one of, like, that should be a Pulitzer winning photo. But I feel like Doug Meacham really just embodies the spirit of the students.
Yeah, he's, well, you know. He's an oddball, but
I love it. To be a successful and good college coach, you're not.
Well, normal. Patterson's an oddball too. So
you're not normal. Harbaugh is not normal. Urban Meyer is not normal.
True.
Nick Saban and his Coca-Cola is not normal.
Yeah, all true. But
best I think with the way we're set up, and this is going to be a bold statement, and you know, not that we have a lot of SEC listeners, but I think given the way we accommodate students is probably the best student section in the country. I mean, they were there at 9 o'clock and it was jam packed.
Yeah. I mean, that's the point I was going to make, is that the student section was full before the rest of the stadium was even like a quarter full. I mean, it's just, the students have just totally embraced this team.
It was fun when we were there.
The culture, like, and it's just, and I, you know, it's beautiful to see.
I'm 2 years older than you, and it was fun when I was there. It was fun when you were there. But it is nothing like it is now.
No.
It is not. It wasn't nearly as organized. And just, they're just killing it.
Yeah.
And except for the fans I saw in the library afterwards. Bad on you. Go to the game. These people are really smart.
Don't go to class. Don't study ever.
No. Okay. Clearly study. But these people were like very, very smart. These women were very smart. They were, but you know. They're as nice as he could be to two people that walked into the new library kind of after a long day of tailgating.
Wow.
But they were nice. They were really, really nice. I don't know if they listen to this. They're probably way too smart to be listening to a couple clowns like us. But if you know, I don't know. If you happen to be listening, thank you. And keep studying. Keep being smart, because they were all like engineering and much smarter than you and I probably are, but
probably doing more important things than talking about football.
Yeah, it was actually really funny, and just to show you like how like big of an age gap there is, even from being like 25, 26 to how old they were, like 20. I was like, They're like, yeah, we're off campus now. It's great. I was like, oh, that's cool. I was like, you know, and then naturally I always progress into TV. I was like, so do you have cable? Like, what's the deal? They're like, yeah, but we never use it. We don't watch cable. It's just funny that as the younger people get, people just don't buy cable anymore.
Yeah.
When we had cable, it was the best. And yeah. I don't know. Sunday night TV, I think, will always be tradition. I'm sure they still probably watch Game of Thrones or whatever in some capacity, but it's changing, man. The world is changing, and it's just leaving us behind. But if they are, they are tech savvy, so if they do listen to this podcast, again, I'm not trying to say their names or what they told me they were affiliated with, but they, you know, they're just very smart women eating salsa limón in the library, so good on them. But yeah, I mean, as good as Kansas State's, you know, well, we were talking about the offense, so let's go back to their, you know, their offense has a lot of trouble. Tell me about their quarterback. What is his name again? Huebner?
It's Huebner. Huebner.
I don't know how to say his name. I don't know how to say anybody's name. You know, the guy, the narrative of him is that he's never been a starter. He, Kansas State has the lowest passing offense in the Big 12, maybe the second lowest. And that's good for TCU's defense. You know, like we talked about, the weak safety is starting to come together. The cornerbacks are starting to turn around.
Well, Orr's been good all season.
Orr has been good. I really like
I like Orr a lot. He's a real good player. I'm excited, you know, to see how that dude grows. But, you know, even O'Mealy has been playing better. Did Mosley play last week? I actually wasn't paying that close of attention. But, yeah.
I think he's... Maybe? I think so. I get their numbers confused. I need to get those glasses, those, like, theater glasses. By the way, when I said I rewatch a game, I just watch all of our offense play. I kind of skipped through the defense, but I need those
the opera glasses
to see the numbers because I can't. I get the thing I like about where I sit is Huebner is the ninth, the tenth is Gerard Hurd. he's throwing about 167. We'll round up. He's throwing about 168 yards per game. So for TCU, like you said, Orr's doing fine. You know, he's not going to tear up TCU's defense. Kansas State's going to win, if they do win, Saturday by somehow getting to Boykin early, committing a turnover. And speaking of turnovers, and this is something that I don't think we really touched on last week when we were talking about Texas. When TCU's defense commits a turnover, I feel like we're going to win the game, especially if they do it early. Because the way the offense responds to defensive turnovers just completely just... I mean, they step on the other team's throat. And it's just, you know, you saw that not only with the Dajay Johnson stuff and the punt, but, I mean, it's just the way they respond is just incredible. And if they can go into Manhattan, just... Not only will Boykin, I think, carve up that secondary, but if they can just... If their defense, the TCU defense, just is able to get Huebner, who... I think he's playing. I know he was injured in the game. It's like we do.
Didn't they have like a backup receiver come in?
Yeah, he did. And, you know, like we've said so many times, you know, we record this on Monday night. So you really don't know what injuries are going to be. I mean, we think Lathan's going to play, you know, by Friday. That could not be the case. But, I think, you know, I think Huebner's going to play. So, but if he doesn't, you know, he's already been the second string. Huber's never, ever started a game until this season, even in high school. So, you know, Huebner or not, I'm liking TCU's chances. But like we're saying, with turnovers, if TCU can just get that defense or their offense commit a turnover early, I mean, it could be ugly again.
Are you surprised that the line opened at 6.5?
Probably no more surprised than I was when it opened at Texas at 8.5. I think 6.5 is a little generous. I think they know how well Kansas State plays at home in Manhattan. And to be fair, I mean, even when we were playing Colin Klein and when we were the 4-8 team in 2013, we've always played Kansas State pretty close. And obviously last year when we were much better, we kind of just dominated them. You know, with Snyder and even Stoops, I just feel like Patterson has those guys figured out. Because even when we were our first year in the Big 12 and the year we went 4-8, we played both of those teams pretty well.
And oh, we've always played OU well.
Yeah, except for 2008, they kind of blew us out. But you're right. I think he just kind of has Snyder's number. And, you know.
Well, he played under Snyder, didn't he?
No, Snyder's old. He's not that old.
Yeah, well.
He's not. I think people think Snyder's a lot. I mean, he's in his like 80s, I think, but in his mid 70s, maybe. He's not like. Yeah, people think of like is a crypt, kind of like a, I don't know, skeleton dipped in wax. But he apparently he actually doesn't really know the names of a lot of his players. But you know, but Kansas State, you know, the fans show up, and this is not an insult to Manhattan, but you know, clearly, if you know. Again, this turns into a geography pod. I don't know how close it is to Kansas City or whatever.
Take Saint a wild Louis, guess. I'll look it up.
St. Louis, whatever. I'm not going to take a wild guess.
Take a wild guess.
It's 2 hours from Kansas City. It's 2 hours from St. Louis. I'm going to say it's equidistant. But those fans show up. They do their best. I mean, it's one of the best atmospheres in the Big 12. You know, friendly as it needs to be. I mean, you don't want to be, you know, have everybody shaking your hand, giving you a kiss on the cheek, you know. Telling you good job, but I mean, you know, they have really good, you know, really nice fan base. I mean, every time they come to Fort Worth, I've been really impressed with their generosity and kind of just their overall knowledge of the game. I mean, Snyder, despite, like I said, not knowing some of his players' names, maybe he's definitely one of the best in the game.
So you were on the money that it's 2 hours to Kansas City.
Yeah.
It is. You said St. Louis was the other one.
Yeah. So does he get this one?
Yeah. Like it's 5.5 hours to St. Louis.
Yeah. Screw St. Louis. Screw the Cardinals. Except for Carpenter, who actually did the video board. That is that's probably like my favorite part of the game.
You know,
just that tease. It's like, who is it gonna be?
I want to do something great with my life.
Who is it gonna be?
Just so I can be the video board guy.
They need to put us on there, although nobody. Very few people get it. But I will say, though, the Kevontae Turpin chants are starting to come in fruition. I can hear them. Yeah. I can hear them a little bit louder. Just a little bit louder every game. But, I mean, you know, like you're saying, 6.5, I think that's reasonable. I maybe 2 weeks ago after the Tech game, I would have probably agreed. But I'm still probably, and we'll get our score predictions after we do the fan... Whatever you want to call them, not fan,
fan mail,
reader, people who actually give us time of day.
We should come up with some
questions,
dude. You and I are too creative and educated to not come up with like catchy names and stuff for segments.
Yeah.
Rather, fan mail is no good.
I don't. We'll think about it. But you know, we'll circle. I hate you. You got the Hickson thing still stuck in my brain.
That's catchy. You know that's catchy.
I know it's catchy. That clearly that's why I'm saying it. But got a lot of questions on Freeze. Let's open it up. I'm gonna go to Twitter right now.
Let me just while you're doing that, let me just take the reins here. So Mike Freeze, I'm sure he's, you know, a fine person. I'm sure, you know, whatever. But the fact is he abandoned this team and
God, I give you the mic for 2 seconds, and this is what happens.
And I don't know. Look, maybe he's having, you know, personal issues and stuff that, you know, I'm not trying to rip on the kid at all. I'm sure it sounds like that.
He also played one game. Let's not crown him like a
yeah.
A hero.
But I'm just the team has moved on.
I think so too, and I think everybody else needs to move on. If he comes back, yeah. Great. If he doesn't, who cares?
Yeah, the team has moved on. Seriously, our starting linebackers.
He did fine. Wilson, yeah.
Montrell Wilson is our starting middle linebacker.
He's great. They're so good.
And Howard is...
I've forgotten about Freeze since the Stephen F. Austin game.
Yeah. So...
People were like, oh, they lost Freeze. It's like he played in one game.
That being said, if Ty Summers had been the other guy,
yeah.
Having a combination of linebackers, Summers and Freeze, you know.
Yeah.
I like words. Words are cool. That would have been cool. But that being said... Howard and Wilson, those are the guys. Those are the guys that I want, and those are the guys that you should want too.
All right, so this one's from Mitch. I'm not going to... I don't know if they want me to say their Twitter handle, so I'll just call them by the names they have. Was the defense that much better, or was it just Texas? I think we kind of already touched on that.
I think the answer is yes. I think it's a little of both.
I think it's a little of both. I definitely think the defense is going to continue to get better, and by November it's going to be something pretty nice. So, how's Big V's ankle? I didn't really see... They didn't have a press conference today, did they?
I haven't seen anything.
But I don't think he looked like he was putting weight on it. So I think
yeah, as opposed to the other, you know, injuries that we've seen, so he was moving okay after.
I have a good feeling about it. Yeah. That was from J. Scott Harris.
Even if he misses a game or two, we're pretty deep.
Yeah. This one's from Ryan Mattingly. Would you rather fight one 200-pound duck or 201-pound ducks?
Now, this was an interesting question.
I'd do one 200-pound duck easily.
That duck would outweigh you.
So? Have you ever seen Jurassic Park with the little tiny little dinosaur, the Lost World, where they ate Peter Stormare?
Well, yeah, but there was like a million of
Usual
them.
Suspects. Yeah, exactly. But it wasn't a million. There certainly wasn't 200 of them. There was probably about 50 of them, and they tore that guy to pieces.
Yeah, well, they're ducks, too.
Ducks are aggressive. Haven't you ever been to the Arboretum, and they throw bread at them, and they bite you in the ass?
Yeah, but they're 1 pound.
I don't know, man. One big duck. What do you have? Do I have a baseball bat, or is it just me? Is it just gloves are off?
Well, and we have. How aggressive are the ducks? That's one thing that we need to. That's take true. Into consideration.
Am I just going to like kick a poor duck?
And are they hungry? Are they well fed? I mean, these are all things that.
That's a good point. So my answer is still the big duck.
I'd probably take my chances with the. Well,
if I had to kill, I'd rather kill one duck as opposed to 200 little tiny ducks.
That's a big duck, though.
It's a fat duck. You're probably not that fat. Is it 200 pounds?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, if it's like the size of a regular duck, but it's 200 pounds, that's a very dense duck.
I'm taking... All right, so you're going to take the little ducks. I'm taking the big ducks.
For the sake of controversy, I'll take the little ducks.
All right. TCU fandom. We already talked about Mike Freeze. They asked him who's coming back. Just moving on.
Yeah, moving on.
Generic guy. Can you measure the marginal drop in talent on D from last year to this? Most media would be quick to assume the margin is wide. I think they're just young. I think Patterson is coaching them up.
Well,
and like this guy, Martin, responded to this. They get in a little argument here. He's like, let's wait till the end of the season. And I think that's fair. I mean, we don't know. I think,
well,
like we've already said, it's already, I think, getting better. It's going to continue to get better.
So here's what I would say to that. First of all, this defense is not going to be last year's defense. Last year's defense, with the exception of the Baylor game, was maybe the best defense in TCU history. I'm not kidding. That defense was incredible last year. And I think it's safe to say that this year's defense is a work in progress. Yeah. The difference is last year's defense coming into the season was a finished product.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Kevin Peters was a character, Trevor from GTA 5, based off of Art Briles. I think that's giving Art Briles way too much credit. Trevor from Grand Theft Auto 5 is
giving him too much hair.
Awesome. John Althoff asks what bowl game we will get into. Let's just ignore the playoff. Let's ignore that talk just for luck's sake. I keep having dreams. I had a dream in the summer, and I've had a few since then, that we're playing LSU, which probably means we're playing in the Sugar Bowl. So, I don't know. I think that's fair.
That'd be cool.
Armando Chapa asked, timeline on players with non-season ending injuries. We talked about Colby. Colby guy's answering. He also asked about Deontay. Deontay's taking a red shirt.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He's done.
Deontay's not going to play.
He's not playing this season.
Listenby, I would be surprised if he didn't get a few snaps next game.
Yeah, I think
he'll play the whole game, but I think he'll probably see, yeah, you know.
Just wait till we get past. Let's see what happens in Kansas State, and then obviously we have Iowa State, then a bye. But West Virginia, I fully expect him back. MK asked, Frogs have missed 16 and 13 tackles respectively in the last two games. Is that inexperience? How does GB fix it? I don't know the mechanics of tackling that much, but like we said, this goes back to, it's going to get better every game. Clearly, 16 to 13.
So the missed tackles against Tech, that was a lot of it was very fundamental. I mean, for one thing, they were a tired defense by the end of the game, and it was just all arm tackles. The last week, to be honest, I didn't see a ton of missed tackles, but even when they did miss tackles, they were slowing guys down, and there were three other Frogs there to make the play, and that's kind of what I'm used to seeing from a TCU defense. So I'm less concerned about guys missing tackles as long as the rest of the defense is swarming to the ball.
Yeah.
That's, I guess, how I would answer that.
Yeah,
that's
fair. Yeah, we're going in our time, but we're going to run through these questions. We're almost done.
The fact, if people are still listening at this point, yeah, good they're going to listen to the end.
Good job.
Yeah, good for you.
Would you rather have GP admit that he's a frequent Frogs of War reader or get, this is the same person again, MK, or get one game a year where GP shows up at the Frogs of War tailgate? I'd rather that he has a reader. I think if he came to a tailgate, it would be just distracting. I think everybody would just be trying to get a picture with him, and the tailgate wouldn't be any fun. Not a spot, not a, you know, jab at him or people I'd want to tailgate with, but.
And just from a marketing perspective, it's a lot better.
It's like a,
it's a lot better if he, you know, comes out to the media. Like if he opens up his press conference and says, "Now, I just, you know, I just want to put this out there before I get into, you know, any of the injury situations or Kansas State, Frogs of War, good site."
Yeah,
good site.
The gnome account, Riffy the gnome, which I think that is an inside joke I somehow missed. What's your favorite concession? I don't know. I always get like a Coca-Cola and like a water.
Until they serve beer in the stadium, I don't care.
I always get like a Coca-Cola and a water, just because.
You mean a Pepsi and a water?
No, they. Oh, I get a Dr. Pepper. They don't have Coke. I forget about that. Why don't we have Coca-Cola?
Any place that serves Pepsi over Coke, you are just slapping people in the face.
I hate Pepsi. And I like Dr. Pepper, but I just, there's nothing beats fucking.
There's number two. That's number two.
Nothing beats.
Second one of the year.
Nothing beats.
Show for the children.
Nothing beats the Coca-Cola on ice, I think. You know? I just, it's hard to beat.
I agree. I'm trying to drink less Coke, actually. You'd be proud of me. I'm drinking a lot of LaCroix at work.
I think it's LaCroix. No, it's definitely LaCroix. Man, I miss when they had Jake's at the stadium. They had like a Jake's burger stand out of the stadium.
Nice.
That's probably like my favorite burger in Fort Worth. So I miss that. I usually don't get the food because I usually am pretty well fed at the tailgate.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do they have corn dogs? I love corn dogs. So if they have a corn dog, I'll eat a corn dog.
Hey, speaking of tailgate, well, never mind. We can talk about this later.
Okay. So that closes it up. Well, actually, one real quick. Let me enter the passcode. And Aaron Wildermuth asked about Mike Freeze. We've already answered it, but I just wanted to let him know that we were thinking about him.
Thanks for listening.
Ask us a question next week. Thank you for listening. Yeah, I don't know. So from there, I guess we'll just close out. This is probably how we should close out every week. Score prediction. Kansas State, TCU, whatever game you want. But preferably that one.
38-16.
Mine was 42-24. I think that's the one I put that I've kind of outlined my preview at. So it may change, but that's kind of like the general gist of it. I think, you know, they hang kind of early, but I think it's just too much in the end.
I think we hold them to a lot of field goals.
That would be great. There's plenty of field goal jokes we can make about Nick Rose in Texas, but
again, no need.
Not worth it. Worth it. Was there something? Oh yeah, okay. You wanted to talk about whatever tailgating stuff off the thing. Did you finish your cider? I have like one more sip.
Let me wait.
We got a cheers to beating Kansas State. To the cider, to the Little Apple, to Fort Worth.
Hey, and
we'll toss it. We'll finish it, and then we'll Sarah close around.
Right. Okay.
Good on you, Austin East Siders. If you want to give me free East Siders anytime, I'm ready for it. Not bad.
Well,
it just tastes like apple juice. That's the one. It tastes
again, I'm just not a cider guy.
It kind of tastes like, yeah. I love it. I think it's great. I don't know. Is there anything else you want to close with? Anything on your mind? TCU or not TCU? Okay, Sunday. Okay, we'll close out this way. Two new heroes. We got one old hero. Arrieta's pitching tomorrow, right? Arrieta.
I thought he had already pitched his last game of the year. Oh, playoff start, don't they?
Yeah, they have the playoff game against. Yeah, it's Wednesday, I think, because the American League wins tomorrow.
Yeah, they've got to throw Arrieta.
So cheers to him. But this. I think maybe this is a podcast of heroes, and one of our new heroes is an old hero of mine, an old-ish hero. But somebody I saw, I'm not going to say where, but at a coffee shop in Fort Worth. A guy who moved to Fort Worth when he was a kid, who I meant to ask him if he was a TCU fan, and I sound like an idiot. Are you a Leon Bridges fan?
Yeah.
He was there, man. I was behind him in line. I was checking to make sure it was him. I was, like, looking at pictures. I was like, it's definitely him. And, couldn't have been nicer. Said he was a big fan. I was, post a day of tailgating and, you know, sitting watching other football at another establishment in Fort Worth. And I was just like, I don't know. I have your vinyl. You sound better on vinyl. Then I went into a weird tangent of the way vinyl sound. And then I went out the wrong way and had to go back out and just be like, see ya. And it was just really embarrassing. But I am a big Leon Bridges fan. If you're not listening to him yet, if you like soul music, if you like rock and roll, if you like, I don't know, I just feel like his music just
it's can, like Motown rock.
Just can appeal to any type of person. I don't know, let's play something. I'm not gonna work it into the pod just because I think that is technically where you can get sued. But since I have it up, I will play his I don't know, should we play Coming Home or Smooth Sailing? I mean,
wait, I'm very confused. Are we playing this on the pod?
I'm playing it right now on my
should I stop recording?
No, I'm gonna play this right now.
Well, okay.
Through my computer.
If we get sued...
We're not going to get sued.
It's your balls.
We're not going to get sued. So this is Leon Bridges. We're going to close out here because why not? So let him take you away. I am Marshall Weber.
I am not.
With me is Andrew Brown. This is Leon Bridges, Fort Worth. Go Frogs. We'll see you next Monday.